Welcome to Pineapple Pizza Podcast,
where we serve up delicious slices of mythology,
cryptozoology,
and urban legends.
I'm Ashley.
To anyone who doesn't know me that well, the fact that I'm laughing right now probably horrifies you.
I'm Emily.
What are the chances?
I don't know.
Like bum bum bum. 50-50? Oh.
And I'm Lindsay.
I banished you to the shadow of death. I corrupt you to the netherworld from which no one has come.
Pineapple Pizza Podcast. Stop on by for a slice, a story, and a laugh.
This is Blood and Firewater, a true crime comedy discussion type podcast. We shoot tequila and chase it with a case of murder. Just as a disclaimer, this podcast contains mature content not suitable for all ages, so listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Rashad, and I would like to thank each and every one of you for tuning into the show. We promise not to be insensitive to the victims and respect their families. However, we will poke fun at other persons, places, and things involved with the case. We're not professionals, and we don't pretend to be. When I said we were covering the most prolific serial killers, I did not know that some of them actually made it on TV while they were serial killers. And no one even knew. Creepy, right? What are the odds? Well, I'll tell you. Taking consideration that times are different now, people aren't gathering in mass crowds anymore, social interaction is different, and so is dating. So, the odds, according to Quora.com, the odds of meeting a serial killer in an online dating setting is 0.000625%, or decimal point, 0.00, all that. Or, in 1 in 160,000 interactions in an online dating setting. So not likely, right? Well, put this in your pipe and smoke it. A very social person, much like ourselves, me not so much. If you meet one new person every day in the average lifespan of a human, which is 78.74 years, but let's round it down to 75 because, let's be honest, no one's getting to know people the day you were born. That's 27,375 days. That's 27,375 people that you've met. Or 0.041%. were unapprehended murderers. Of course, if you meet 10 new people a day, say you work at QT or something, that's 4.1 unapprehended killers you've met. And, of course, 100 would be 41. But here's the scary number. On average, in the United States, in the average lifespan, you'll meet 717,266 people, 10.6 unapprehended murderers. If you add in the number of murderers who have been apprehended, that number would be significantly higher. We have a murderer in our family, and I'm sure if you ask the right questions, you'll find one too. I brought up the odds of meeting a serial killer in the dating arena because our serial killer for this week just so happened to be on the dating game. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, our killer had just the right amount of charisma, machismo, and things to land, and looks to land a spot on national television on the show The Dating Game. You may know him as the Dating Game Killer. He was introduced on the show as a very successful photographer, meaning he was very developed. He had an eye for beauty, but when he wasn't behind the camera, you could catch him, literally, as he loved to skydive and ride motorcycles. A real thrill seeker, this one. Ladies, hold on to your panties. Introducing Rodney Alcala. And Rodney actually won the date on the show, but the lady that was the quote-unquote lucky winner refused the date at the last minute. And good for her, because, well, let's talk about it. But first, if this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. If you are at all interested in hearing any of our bonus episodes as they are starting to pile up, feel free to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/bfwpod. Come be a bloody, tier start at just $1, and from there, the possibilities are not quite endless, but you could have your very own episode. You pick the case, we do the work. We had 3 or 4 new episodes there every month, ranging from urban legends to if God masturbates. A lot of fun there. We don't run commercials on this show, never have and never will. We are a completely independent podcast, and we want to keep it that way. And with your support, whether it's a dollar or even a like on our socials, it keeps us motivated. Speaking of socials, you can find us on Instagram at Blood and Firewater Podcast, Twitter at BFW Pod Squad, Snapchat at BFW Pod Squad. We want to talk to you because you want to talk to us. Don't be a stranger. As I mentioned before, we talk about some of the worst people ever born, but we want to talk to some of the best people to ever live, and that is you guys. Thank you so much for supporting the show. We do this for you. And if you ever need us, we're here for you. Another thing that helps more than you think, more than any money or likes, is a review on iTunes. Find that purple button on your phone, leave a 5-star review, leave some words, leave one word, and we'll shout you out on the show. It helps us and other magnificent, like-minded people to be noticed and get our podcast seen. Speaking of which, we do have a new review to read, if I can just find it here shortly. All right, so the headline of it is Drinks, Dark Humor, and Death. Okay, Rashad does a phenomenal job. I had binged several episodes before I even realized how long I'd been listening, because he completely pulled me in. I appreciate that they cover a variety of cases, some that are well-known, some that I'd never heard of before, and they do it all with a drink and a dark sense of humor, which is an important skill when dealing with dark topics. I'm looking forward to the cases they'll be covering in Season 3. Keep up the great work, guys. Thank you so much, Pineapple Pizza. I actually have a promo for them that I'm going to play at the end of this episode, or you might have already heard it. I'm not sure yet. Just got to put everything together. Another thing. Okay, read that. So second, we introduced a new segment of the show called What's Poppin', Baby? Since a lot of these serial killers operated before our time, 1979 was the year of Rodney Alcala's arrest. So Dre, 1979, what's poppin', baby?
What's poppin'? You want to talk about it?
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about what's poppin'. Brandon, how you doing?
Hey, hey.
All right, baby. Don't hurt nobody. Do you know anything about being mad? How about being mean?
I'm so mad right now. Already?
Already? So we know about being mean and being mad, right?
Nope.
Well, in France, in 1979, 23 people die in Nice, France.
Nice?
Nice. It was Nice. You were right. Technically, it's how you pronounce it, but it's spelled Nice.
I drooled a little bit. This is
I'm proud of you, bud.
All right.
I'm really proud of you.
You go, boy.
Rashad, do you know anything about sitting on warm toilet seats at truck stop bathrooms?
Come on, where was that one time in New York?
Come on now.
No, I can't see
it. Oh, boy. She put, like, she has specifics.
Did you sit or did you squat?
No.
He sat.
All right.
You don't have the leg muscles. But at any rate, in 1979, due to the crisis in Iranian oil, there was an increase.
You do a lot of Eastern European stuff.
I love them.
Okay.
Wait, Iran? Eastern European?
European?
I thought she said Ukraine.
No, I definitely did. I said Iran.
Mm.
There we go. All right. Okay. Let me.
You ran. How about that?
European. Since you ran.
You're a young man, right?
I am.
I said, hey, young man. You listen to me? I said, hey, young man.
Baby face.
There we go. All right. Well, in 1979, YMCA sues the village people for the
YMCA song?
Yeah.
They sued it?
They sued them.
Did they win?
Yeah.
YMCA won?
They won that shit. It was their name.
Well,
you can't get any more incriminating.
They was like free advertising. Like, come and stay at the...
That
it's fun to stay at the... Well, like, the propaganda behind it was a little...
Yeah, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that.
That's a little strong.
I mean, it was a whole bunch of naked dudes on stage hitting, you know, YMCAs and shit. Like, it was a bad look.
For the Young Men's Christian Association.
Yeah.
That's a bad look.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. Okay. Rashad, do you know anything about stubbing your do you know anything about stubbing your toe? I fucked that one all the way up.
Just a minute.
Here we go. All right. Do you know anything about stubbing your pinky toe on a bedpost?
Oh, bitch.
No, I don't have a bedpost.
Brandy, do you know anything about that?
I don't have a floating bed, so hell yeah.
There you go. See? Come back. We're real people over here, Risha. This is terrible. Well,
this is just awful. 19 what?
1979.
I wouldn't lie, but I know about stumbling my pinky toe on a bed.
Come on now.
Bougie ass.
I just can't do this. I lost my place. I'm so mad.
Because he ain't never started to. Who he think he is?
Just a couple of popular movies in 1979. It's Superman, the movie, Rocky 2, Alien, and the Muppet movie.
Oh, the Muppet.
Alien came out in 1979?
1979, bro.
What?
It's an old-ass movie.
Ain't it, though? But I feel like I've seen that shit a lot.
We old.
Rashad, do you know anything about heroin addictions?
Don't you look at me.
Here we go. Okay.
All right. No. I'm a lie and say no.
Okay. Lie.
Well, I just want to let you know, in 1979, Kate Hudson, Heath Ledger, and Jennifer Love Hewitt were born.
Oh, shit.
Check that out.
And they all died of heroin.
No.
Nope. Nope. Not even.
Not like, one of them died.
Not even close.
Are you mind fucking me here?
Oh no! Welcome to the club.
I'm sure everybody.
Rashad, do you know anything about walking in your house at 1 o'clock in the morning, or Brandy for you as well? I just want to make sure you're aware, you're alive, you're here with us at 1 o'clock in the morning, just walking through your house and just like stepping on a Lego. Oh, wow. You know, 1 o'clock in the morning. You know anything about that?
Yeah.
Rashad, you know anything about that?
Does this have anything to do with Legos?
Not even close, no. Okay. So Pink Floyd Pink Floyd released the multi-award winning concept
Off the album. Wall.
The Wall.
The Wall? The I wall. Thought it was Off the Wall. That's Michael Jackson.
That's Michael Jackson.
Okay, so it's just The Wall.
Just Stop. The Wall.
Michael Jackson is part of all the songs. I just didn't know which one to sing. It was word vomit. Word vomit. What else happened, Jerry?
Okay, you want to talk about it? Let's talk about it. Do you know anything about drinking a warm beer on a hot July?
Brandy?
Brandy specific. Her beer choice is warm.
I like warm beer, so don't even.
she likes a stomach ache. I don't know. She's like, irritable bowel syndrome.
Nobody else gonna drink this?
Is this your beer?
Well,
I ain't put it in the refrigerator because I ain't want nobody to drink it. Wrong.
It's outside. But it's fun.
Well, in 1979, during the Death to the Klan March, organized by the communist supporters in Greensboro, North Carolina, white supremacists opened fire.
Real dark.
Yeah, opened fire on the crowd, killing five of them.
Mm. What? And you always like leave it on like, I guess like.
How would you like me to leave it, Rashad?
Just like you're doing it, bro. Like,
yeah, okay. I'm just saying, it sounds like you're bad at me.
People need to know.
Well, this has been your co-host, Dre, with What's Poppin' in 1979.
As a reminder, we have a FTG scale, or a Fuck That Guy scale for this season. It's a 1 out of 10 ranking for if there is any instance of sympathy, you know, you can kind of relate to the guy, you know, because we all can kind of relate to a serial killer in one way or another. And a lot of them, you know, it may just stem from mental illness and some not so much. So far, Dahmer's gotten the highest score, which is a 10. Gein came in at about an 8. So at the end of this season, we're going to compile all the numbers and we're going to see who was the worst serial killer of all time. With that being said, keep in mind all of the criteria. I'll probably further develop a more detailed criteria list. We're only 2 episodes in. Well, this would be the 3rd, but we're only 2 episodes into this season. So like everything's a little new. We're doing things just a little bit differently. So keep that with you in life, whatever. So this case tonight is about a very bad man. That man had many aliases, but he was born Rodrigo Jaquez Alcala Bocor in San Antonio, Texas, to Raul Alcala Bocor and Ana Marie Gutierrez on August 23rd, 1943. His legal name is Rodney Alcala. Papa Alcala moved the family to Mexico in 1951. They would again relocate to Los Angeles, California after the father abandoned the family. This event would be the single worst event to happen in Rodney's childhood. No other traumatic event that's ever been said by him or anybody else. He was actually quite popular in school. Good looks, dated girls, never had any problems, which isn't the MO for the last couple cases that we covered. Dahmer started off bad. Real bad, real fast. And Ging just... poor Ging. What he does have in common with our last couple is that in 1960, Alcala joined the military. Dahmer did it. Ging tried, but everybody knew something was a little off about Ging. Alcala was a clerk in the United States Army. 1964 rolls around, and Alcala has a nervous breakdown. Goes AWOL. And he hitchhiked back to his mother's house from Fort Bragg in North Carolina back to California after he was diagnosed by a military psychiatrist with antisocial personality disorder. And we'll find out later that some other psychiatric experts would add to this list of mental ailments, which seems completely backwards from his upbringing. Like, what did he see or what did he do in the military that would cause such a mental breakdown that he would go on to do nothing positive for anyone ever again? Alcala graduated from UCLA School of Fine Arts in 1968. There he studied under Roman Polanski, a very famous director, victim of one of our up-and-coming episodes, and also a child rapist. But that's not who we're talking about. The very same year in September, Alcala would attempt to claim his first victim, 8-year-old Tally Shapiro. All she was doing was walking to school. She was kidnapped, molested, and almost strangled to death by a 10-pound steel bar. While on her way to school, a beige car approached her from the rear. Alcala asked if she needed a ride. She replied that she didn't talk to strangers, but Alcala insisted that he knew her family. She thought about it, and little did she know, she was getting into the car of a fucking monster. By the grace of God, someone watched the entire sequence of events and they tailed Alcala back to his Hollywood apartment and called the police. Police officer Chris Camacho arrives shortly after and they knock. Alcala peeks through the blinds. Yells out to the officer, "Hey! I just got out the shower. I gotta get dressed." Camacho says, "Hey, you got about 10 seconds to open this fucking door." And crickets. So Camacho kicks the door down. In the kitchen, Tyler Shapiro lay face down in a very large pool of blood. To her left, her shoes, a pair of all-white Mary Janes. To her... Did I say left or right? I just started over. In the kitchen, Tyler Shapiro lay face down in a very large pool of blood. To her left, her shoes, a pair of all-white Mary Janes. To her right, a 10-pound steel bar that was used to strangle her. Upon discovery, the police thought that she was dead. And while attempting to give her medical attention, Alcala slipped out of the back door. After searching the house and everything else, it seemed to be in order. Like, the house was relatively clean, except for the pool of blood and the little girl laying on the floor. But when the police started to go through Alcala's things, like his photo equipment, all that, they made a grisly discovery. Pictures, hundreds of pictures, of little girls and boys, mostly sexually explicit. When police returned back into the kitchen, they heard Tally Shapiro gasping for air. She was rushed to the hospital and recovered, but had no memory of the attack after a certain point. Like, she remembered up to, like, hey, he showed me this picture, and then lights out. So that was probably when the attack initiated. When Tally was back on her feet, the family moved out of the country. Stick a pin in that, because I'm going to come back to that later. So now, Alcala is on the lam. What better place to go than the other side of the country? The Big Apple, New York City. He enrolled in the NYU Film School and went by the name John Berger. Now, let me put my glasses on. I'm not saying that no investigative work was done by the LAPD, because they did search. They got tips. They got leads. And they asked around, you know, the UCLA campus if they knew who, what, where, and why Rodney would do something like this. And everybody was like, you got the wrong guy. Rodney would not hurt a fly. Like, that's what one of his professors, like, claimed. From 1968 through 1971, Alcala hit the charts of the FBI's most wanted. And he went to work at an all-girls arts camp in New Hampshire under the name John Berger. Now, here's probably how that name mix-up went down. Hey, what's your name? John Berger. John Berger? Yeah, that sounds about right. That's probably how that happened. But right before that, he committed his first murder, his first actual murder that we know of, anyway. The victim's name was Cornelia Creeley. She was a TWA flight attendant that had recently moved to Manhattan. Alcala offered to help her move into her apartment. She was found raped and strangled inside of said apartment. Police would not be able to tie Alcala back to this murder until 40 years later. But back in 1971, two campers were at a post office and they saw the FBI's most wanted list, you know, in the post office. Like, I can't tell you when the last time I went to a post office, but like, I remember seeing those missing kid things in there.
Okay.
And I would be like, am I on that board? Like, is this my family? Is my real family just like looking for me? They're probably not. But anyway, they see a picture of Rodney Alcala, but they know the guy that looks like the picture as John Berger or Berger, whatever. So they're like, this is weird. We should tell somebody. And, you know, that's almost, you know, what every child should do. See something, say something. So they reported to, you know, the camp directors, and the camp directors, they hacky sacked their way down to the post office to take a look for themselves. And sure as shit, Berger is Alcala, or Alcala is Berger. So they give the police a little ring-a-ling ding ding, and Alcala was arrested. And Alcala was arrested and extradited back to California. Now, Tally and the rest of the Shapiro family had relocated to Mexico, and they had no intention of coming back for the Alcala trial. So no primary witness, no trial. So Alcala had to plead guilty to a lesser charge. So instead of getting the attempted murder, kidnapping, assault, rape, ticker tape, we caught your ass parade, he should have got, Alcala pleaded guilty to child molestation. He was sentenced to 1 year to life, all right, and was paroled after 34 months under the indeterminate sentencing program. Basically, he went up for parole in 1974 in front of a parole board and not a judge, and they deemed him rehabilitated. So Alcala is a free man until 8 weeks later, he wasn't. He was arrested for providing marijuana to a 13-year-old girl who claimed that she was kidnapped and assaulted by Alcala. Starting to see a pattern here. Another 2 years down the road, Alcala is back out again under the indeterminate sentencing program. He returned back to LA where he worked for the Los Angeles Times as a typesetter. This is a time in just U.S. history where if you want to be a fucking astronaut, you just go down to Houston and tell them, I want to be an astronaut. And they were like, try this helmet on. Or like, you want to be a police officer and you had no experience, they just hand you a gun and be like, do you know where to put the bullets? Or something, I don't know.
You know which side the bang bang comes out of.
Okay. Yeah, that's more of an accurate depiction in my head. Just like, have you ever seen one of these, son? July of 77, Alcala convinced his parole officer to let him go to New York to see his family. He was sad, he was homesick, you know, whatever lies you got to tell your PO to get him to let you go wherever you want to go. Now let me take my glasses off. They know that he's a rapist and he keeps kidnapping little girls. Not quite serial rapist yet, but right at the line, and given the opportunity, he's quite capable of hitting it from behind the arc.
Oh.
That's the line.
That's the line, yeah.
It's a basketball reference.
I get that, but it does. It sounds like you're talking about him bending over little kids.
He's a flight risk. You just let him overnight himself to New York after almost murdering an 8-year-old girl. Fuck it. Let's see what happens, right?
All
right,
take your time.
Not right. This goes way wrong and probably doesn't look good on the probation officer's resume, if you get where I'm going with that. He probably didn't have a job. Like, was that your guy? He's like, yeah.
Why'd you let him go? Well, he missed his family.
Yeah, you're about to miss your family. A week after arriving back in Manhattan, Alcala would claim his next victim, 23-year-old Ellen Jane Hoover, daughter of the owner of the popular Hollywood nightclub Ciro's and goddaughter of Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay.
Ah, see? Oh, wait, no, that's the... No,
that's Sammy.
Okay, so I get him and like a Chicago police officer from the 40s mixed up a little bit sometimes.
Pretty much the same.
Her remains would be found buried on the grounds of the Rockefeller Estate in Westchester County. Witnesses claim that they saw her, then they saw her with him, with Alcala, at her apartment. Then, shortly after, they only saw him. And then she was reported missing. Sir Rodney was questioned, but the police had no eyewitness of the crime. A weapon, a body, nothing. So they had to let him go. And boy, did he go. Right back to California. But before he got there, he made a pit stop in Wyoming. There he met a woman named Christine Thornton. Now, this entire time, Alcala had been enticing women and girls with the thoughts of making it big in fashion or modeling with the help of his flash photography. He offered to take pictures of these women with the dreams of making their big break through his connections. Alcala would use the guise of being a photographer to get close to his victims in an intimate setting without raising suspicions. And once the photo shoot was over, he'd strangle his victims to the point of passing out, allowing them to regain consciousness and recognition of what's going on, and then strangled again until completion. The pictures were just trophies for him. Much like Dahmer in the skulls, Gein in his furniture set, serial killers like to be reminded of their accomplishments. You know, it's almost like you ever just sit there and look at all your trophies on your Xbox?
No.
Okay. Well, they give them to you. You should check it out.
Oh. Since when?
He added them to his quote-unquote portfolio. Right before returning back to California, Christine was added to that portfolio. A portfolio that included thousands of sexually explicit photos, and a large majority of these people in the photos have yet to be identified. Which is a scary thought. It's just like, you have a picture of a person that we don't even know her name, where she came from, nothing.
So wait, he would just randomly pick up these ladies and then, you know what I'm saying, do the whole thing, Kit Kat and Caboodle.
Mm-hmm.
But now he has pictures of these people. We could do nothing but assume that they're dead and nobody knows who they are.
Exactly.
Oh.
November of 77, back in California, Alcala started where he left off, adding to his portfolio. He murdered 18-year-old Jill Barcombe. She had just moved to California from New York. She was found, quote-unquote, rolled in a ball in a ravine in L.A. Then in December, he murdered 27-year-old nurse George Wixted. She was bludgeoned in her Malibu apartment. Then he went on the Dana game, national fucking TV. In September of 1978, he was bachelor number one.
This is Channel 5, KTLA, Los Angeles.
From the Chuck Berry stations in Hollywood, California, it's the Dating Game. Here's the star of the show, your host, Jim Lang.
Thank you, and welcome once again to the Dating Game. Time to meet our first three eligible bachelors for game number one.
Good luck, gentlemen. Well, let's see. Bachelor number one is a successful photographer who got his start when his father found him in the dark room at the age of 13, fully developed. Between takes, he might find him skydiving or motorcycling. Please welcome Rodney Alcala. Rod, welcome. And we're going to start by having them say hello to you and see how they sound. Number one, would you say hello to Cheryl, please? We're going to have a great time together, Cheryl.
What's wrong with morning, afternoon?
Well, they're okay, but nighttime's when it really gets good. Then you're really ready.
I'm a drama teacher, and I'm going to audition each of you for my private class. Bachelor number one, you're a dirty old man. Take it.
Come on, over here.
I am serving you for dinner. What are you called, and what do you look like?
I'm called the banana, and I look really good.
Can you be a little more descriptive?
Peel me.
And he won, believe it or not. But when Cheryl met him backstage, she found him to be, well, a creep. And she got lucky because she would have ended up in his portfolio as well. June 1979, Alcala would claim his next victim, 33-year-old Charlotte Lamb. She was raped, strangled, and left in the laundry room of an El Segundo apartment complex. Also in the same month, Jill Partino, age 21, murdered in her Burbank apartment. Stay with me here. The carnage is almost over, but the last one is by far the worst. And there was a lot of instances where they couldn't figure out if the Hillside Strangler, because the Hillside Strangler was like active right around this time, and the Hillside Strangler strangled people, and it fit the same MO that Alcala was doing. He was just like strangling people. So the Hillside Strangler strangled, Alcala strangled. So like it was really hard to deviate from the two. They were like, is this the Hillside Strangler's body or is this Alcala? Like who's like us?
You stopped. Like I was gonna be like me. So I was just, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh.
12-year-old Robin Samso. She was on her way to ballet class on June 20th, 1979. Just before she was going to go to ballet class, she was, you know, hanging out with a friend named Bridget at the beach. Then a creepy guy approached the two little girls and asked if they wanted their photographs taken. Someone saw the interaction and approached them, as anyone should, to check if everything was on the up and up. And the guy took off running. Weird. Later that day, someone from the ballet studio called the Samso house and informed the parents that they had not seen Robin that day. Robin had worked out a deal with the ballet studio. She would answer phones in exchange for lessons. That day, she was not there to answer those phones. 12 days later, her remains would be found in the San Gabriel Mountains on July 2nd, 1979. Bridget was questioned, and the police obtained a sketch of what she thought the man looked like, and he looked just like Rodney Alcala. Now, Rodney's PO saw the picture, and maybe for just like a quick 2 seconds, he was like, that's my guy. Shit. I let him go to New York to see family. Fuck. He notified Huntington Beach PD, and on July 14th, 1979, Rodney Alcala was arrested. His car and his house were searched, and police found a receipt for a storage unit in Seattle and the key for the lock in the car. After a search warrant was issued, police went to Seattle and searched the storage unit. There they found so many boxes of very unpleasant pictures of women and children. Also inside one of the boxes, they found another trophy system that Alcala was privy to. He would keep the earrings of his victims. July 28th, the arraignment took place in Orange County, and he was charged with the murder of Robin Samso after a pair of earrings were identified as hers by her parents. He was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death for the murder. But the sentence was soon overturned by the California Supreme Court, due to the trial judge of Orange County allowing the jury to hear about Alcala's past cases before trial. So giving them a preconceived guilty charge because he was already kidnapping, raping, assaulting, all this already. He was all like a hot and ready about to go up for a death sentence, basically. So,
Well, give the guy a chance.
Supreme Court overturned it. The first one. Oh, yeah, and he gave some kids some weed, too. Like, that's... In 1986, he was convicted again and sentenced to death again. But a panel of the Ninth Circuit Court overturned the conviction once again because a witness, and help me understand this, because I literally couldn't understand it. So I just took the direct quote. Quote, a witness was not allowed to support Alcala's contention that the park ranger, that the park ranger that found Samso's body had been hypnotized by police investigators, unquote. That is such a wordy-ass sentence that I don't understand. I'll read it again. A witness was not allowed to support Alcala's contention that the park ranger that found the Samso's body, I literally copied and pasted from the court documents. A witness was not allowed to support Alcala's contention that the park ranger that found the Samso's body had been hypnotized by police investigators, unquote. I have no idea what that means. I've been reading this shit for like my whole life. I've never seen a sentence so confusing in my life.
Hypnotized?
I don't know. I don't know what it means. Like, I don't know what it means. And it I read it, I don't know how many times. But it's fun.
Look, I... No. No. Ain't no way in the hell, no.
So between the second and third trials, Alcala wrote a book, which I plan to try and find and buy. The book is titled You, the Jury, which he suggested that another guy committed the murder of Robin Samso, and he also filed lawsuits against the California penal system. I don't know why I stress the word penal so much.
Yeah, I saw that. Just nasty.
So he filed a lawsuit against the California penal system for refusing to provide a low-fat diet. And a slip and fall incident. I guess he thought, you know, he could get gluten-free gruel when they didn't have that 19, whatever the fuck he went to jail. So now it's 2003. Two failed death sentences later, but a gaggle of new evidence against Alcala has surfaced. The prosecution entered the motion to include the other four murders as newly found evidence and DNA had linked Alcala back to those as well. 2006, the Supreme Court allowed it, and in February of 2010, Alcala stood trial for a total of 5 murder charges.
Five.
I mean, if you beat one, they got 4 more to back it up. In a twist of events, Alcala decided that he would represent himself for the third trial. He pulled a Bundy. For 5 hours of that trial, he would interrogate himself.
What?
He asked himself questions and answered said questions.
Where were you?
He would use a deeper voice for the lawyer part and then change his voice for the part that he was talking about. So he'd be like, Mr. Alcala, where were you on December 15th, 1979? And then he'd run back over to the stand and then he'd be like, I was at a theme park and I was trying to get a job because I had lost my job because they found out I was a sexual deviant and I was not at that little girl house or at the beach at all. And then he would run back over to the defense table and be like, all right, Mr. Alcala, no further questions. And then 5 hours of that. Bro, I would have paid to see that.
You would have paid to see him interrogate himself for 5 yes. hours?
I don't know if you, when I get old, I want to go downtown and just sit and watch people in court. No reason. I ain't even, is your son here? No.
That said no reason.
I'm just nosy. It's free. I can bring popcorn. It won't set off the metal detectors.
So you're just going to walk in? What y'all got going on in here?
Can I visit the break room real quick? Pop this popcorn. Okay, so Alcala made no attempt to dispute the other 4 murder charges. His main focus was proving that he did not murder Robin Samso. when they, you know, when the prosecution came up and it was like, what about these other four bodies that we're talking about today? He was like, man, I don't remember those. That was all he said. His closing argument was a segment of a song by Arlo Guthrie, one of those two, titled, quote, Alice's Restaurant, unquote. It's a fucking 17-minute song.
What?
I didn't say it was good. After a little over a day, the jury came back with their verdict. Guilty of first-degree murder on all five counts. In March 2010, Rodney Alcala was sentenced to death for the third time. They've killed this man three times. He was also indicted for his New York crimes. Never forget. And he received another life sentence, as New York does not have the death penalty. Of all of the photographs in Alcala's quote-unquote portfolio, 120 of them were released to the public in hopes to identify them to see if there were any additional victims. This is why police would put Alcala's body count in the 100-plus club. 900 other pictures still remain, but they weren't able to release them due to the graphic nature of the pictures. This is how they found the woman in Wyoming, is through these pictures. So I'm going to try and put a collage together of the pictures that they do have and post it on Instagram, but I'm not sure how that works or how I'm going to get that to work. But anyway, that is Rodney Alcala's story. Three death sentences, 100-plus club. Dre, where you put him on the FTG scale?
I'm going to have to put him above Gein, but still below Dahmer, so probably about a 9.
Yeah.
Because I would have put him right around Gein, but it's the fact that he was choking people until they would literally come back to life, find out exactly what he's doing, and then on top of that, he would just choke them and kill them from that point.
Yeah.
Like, but, I mean, it's still sadistic, but, I mean, Dahmer is just, there's no topping that guy.
I think I got one for you.
What's that?
I guess you'll just have to wait till next week.
Okay.
But anyway, that was Alcala. I'll give him, like you said, I'll give him a 9.75 for sure. Like, he's not going to top Dahmer.
Yeah, but he's still really
terrible.
I can dig
it. Reach out to us on our socials. Tell us what your number is for this sick fuck. You can always find us on Twitter at BFW Pod Squad, Instagram at Blood and Fire Water Podcast, and Snapchat at BFW Pod. I've been your host, Rashad. Over there has been Dre.
Hello.
We are Audi 5000. Stay alert. Stay alive.